And a very good morning to you. This is the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. You can reach us at 434-1790. You can send a WhatsApp message to 266-4862, 266-IVOB. You can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. Dennis Johnson, your host until 1. John Stout taking care of things technical. And it's good to be with you on this Tuesday morning. $167 million is not a bad payout day, and that's what Massey Stores apparently made in the first quarter, thanks, they say, in part to the reduction in the corporation tax in Barbados. Well, I hope that those who are consumers of what is found at Massey Stores will get a nice little, perhaps 2 or 3% reduction in the basket of items to say thank you for your generosity. And perhaps those who work there, the people who check your groceries, those who pack the shelves, the nice ladies and gentlemen who take the bags to the car, I hope they get a little envelope with a little thing in it saying, you know, thank you for the $167 million extra. Won't take $7 million to do that. You could hold on to $160 for the investors. Anyway, that's one. Two, they tell me curiosity killed the cat, but I can't help being a curious kind of person. And perhaps if we had journalists who were curious, some of the questions I asked would be answered. For example, whenever I pass Lower Bay Street in the area of what used to be Liquidation Center, I see work. I see, you know, bobcats and people moving things around and black screens and containers being packed. Who paying these guys? The government of Barbados, Liquidation Center, the people who develop in Hyatt? Winning a finish? Because it's been going on for a while. I'm just curious because somebody has to be paying them. I don't think they're doing it for free. You know, and maybe it's none of my business, you know, maybe. Maybe it's being paid for by the liquidation or by Hyatt or somebody other than the government of Barbados. If it's the government of Barbados, I want to know. The third one is I'm going to be political, and I know I'm going to get slapped by those who like slapping me, but I couldn't help but smile. You must be in a bad position politically when your former prime minister breaks his silence after 2 years to tell you, you kicked me out, but you ain't no better than you. Well, you can't do better than me. It's like, you know, you and the wife break up, and she got a new boyfriend, and you look at her and tell her, you ain't nicer than me, though, but you ain't got nobody because nobody wants you. You know, you're by yourself. You're just jealous. But anyway, that was my political jam because, you know, I like politics, and it's a season of politics. And, you know, that's why I steer the politics, because I see the funny side that people don't share my humor. But anyhow, so we talk about what's on your mind, and we go until 1 o'clock. Ooh, John, I got a full board. They thought it was Peter, perhaps. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am good, and you?
I good, too. How should I start this?
Start. Start where you want to start.
You know, some people are getting some very, what can be deemed silly arguments sometimes, or aggressive arguments, or what of that. But at the end of the day, both of them are winners. Now, a man who has bought a Suzuki all his life, he is going to push that Suzuki is the best thing. You have never, because if he had problems, he would have changed.
Agreed.
Another man who have had Nissan's, same principle apply. And sometimes they would argue. Yeah, there's nothing wrong arguing or discussing, but there's something called middle ground. Peter Tosh and Bob Marley. We ain't going to talk about Peter Tosh and Bob Marley. We ain't going to talk about Peter Tosh and Bob Marley, though, right? We ain't going to bring up.
Man, you cuss me so much about that, you know?
Of course. I get you there, but at the end of the day.
I tell you, meet me by a rum shop in Nelson Street, and you quarrel with me, but anyhow.
We gonna get Wesley's referee. We gonna be listening. We coming home with the same music thing. Mm-hmm. We have all Bob Marley's and Peter Tosh's right here. Mm-hmm. In the name of Red Plaster by the Gabbies, and of course Edwin Yearwood. There's a song that Edwin saying something greater. And I wonder if people ever take the time to listen to these lyrics. Really listen, not only to listen, but to understand the content of the music. I took time to listen to it, and I wrote up two verses. Verse 3. The mind's description of drug pushers made them out to look just like me, but can drugs fit into a tight system before any authority? Those small fries that we distributing it and taking life without mercy. Take a nice trip to any system yard. Do we look like authority? Religions crying, religions down, leaving youth to feel so confused. False prophets counting the public gain as religion is fully abused. Why were leaders seemingly more concerned about their own good welfare and bliss? Trying to hide the truth from a whole wide world where racism no longer exists. Another verse.
You went to read the whole thing?
No, I left my one. The next verse is, man's, and this is very important, very, very important, to me at least. Man still tries to separate his own brothers with class and creed. Upper class, middle class, and lower class, with the lower following lead. Separation shows my concern that I am especially rapid and fast. Man on dying bed needs a donor's blood. Does he request a certain class? No. But who am I just a wanderer passing judgment and kicking fast? Because death is a crucial part of life and man returns to nothing but death. You know, that's where we come from. That's where we go about. And if there's one thing that don't discriminate, it's death.
Agreed.
So then it's all the millions and billions that you got when you're coming up. So my question is, why do we treat one another like dirt? Why, if you have risen, why don't you just pull up another feather off the ground?
Sir, because of something called greed, because of the flaws in our makeup, the same way that Edwin could craft that lyric or those lyrics based on his observation means that he's come across those who have judged him because of his locks, judged him because of where he came from, judged him because of what school he went to, judged him because of the company he keeps, judged him because of all sorts of things, because people judge based on sometimes not the things they see in you necessarily, you know, but the things they see reflected in you that they don't like. So because I may have had a bad experience with somebody from place X or place Y, I see them people from there, so I don't want to associate with them. But sometimes the people I associate with are viewed in the same light that I view other people because of the way we behave when we see other people. So it's a dynamic of human nature that you have to manage and get accustomed to, and hopefully my brother get over it, because sometimes it holds us back. It stymies our growth. It causes us to be bitter, and that don't help life either. That's why we used to have the discussions we have about your two reggae greats when they're both reggae greats. I notice you're going to my good friend, I don't know, but that's why I like music, sir. It can say a lot. It can say a lot. Always good hearing you, and keep on pressing. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, young Dennis.
How are you, sir?
Glenn Murray, I'm good. Yourself?
I am good.
Good to hear you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just calling because last Friday I was on with David, and we were discussing the prolonged and unsatisfactory situation to create regarding consultants and consultancies and how the price people. I don't know if you're familiar with the discussion.
Yeah,
right. And during the exchange of it, David, like the good, I get my view. I support him, and during my talk with David, like the good journalist that he had, he asked me, did What did you ever discuss it, like when you were in cabinet?
In cabinet, right.
Right, and I said, I honestly said no. You thought I said no, no, because I could not. It did not. It never came up. And I said no to it because that was my honest reaction. I could not recall when it ever came up and things. So that is what my, I reacted to it. But then one of your callers, Mr. Le, who referred to him, came in and first he described my comments as foolishness, which is fine, that's great. Fair comment, that's no big thing. But then he said that I had a convenient memory. And that is what I'm calling to object to that, because that is not anything complimentary. When that phrase is used, it means that you only remember things when it suits your purpose, and if it's negative, you don't remember it. It implies that you're not sincere, you're dishonest, you're disingenuous, you're at least intellectually dishonest. And I thought it was unfortunate, and I thought it's unfair to me because Mr. Latouche did not give any justification for it. He just said that. I don't know Mr. Latouche, really. In fact, I was surprised at it because I've always admired and listened to his presentation, which are usually sung and very forcefully presented and whatnot. But apart from probably a couple in exchanges with myself on the phone when I was the moderator, we've never met in person, engaged in frequent conversations. I don't think I've ever on the radio before said that I couldn't remember. So I thought to say I have a convenient memory was unjustified and unfair. And what I want to say is that I don't know. I know his parents. I know his mother. I know his late father. I know his uncles. So I took umbrage to the fact that he could say that about me, not knowing me. He might hear about me and think he knows me. He might know about me, or think he knows, but he doesn't know me. And I thought it was an unjustified characterization. And I want to let him know that I take umbrage to it, and I just like to set the record straight that I do not support that characterization of me, because he did not settle a case that proved his point.
Okay. One of the reasons why when I'm hosting, I try to steer callers away from saying
person.
The reason. For giving a reason why people do things. I often tell them it's quite all right to say, I don't think that Dennis treated me fairly.
Right.
When you get to, I don't think that Dennis treated me fairly because, as usually you tell them, stop there because... You know, you're ascribing motive, and I'm uncomfortable with ascribing motive because honestly, I don't know people's motives. Well, I try not to, even though it may be kind of obvious. Yeah.
But I just want to say that when I'm discussing, I try to discuss what a person has said or what they have done. I don't ever reflect on a person as a personality, as a person. And therefore, when that happens, it's because I think it weakens the argument, it cheapens the argument, it does not add to the discussion. We're supposed to be discussing ideas, activities, you know, actions, etc. So that's why I've always not supported that approach to debating anyhow.
Mm.
When you go ad hominem in a person, it, like I said, devaluates the whole and lowers the whole. And I have a great lot of respect for brass tacks, and therefore I would never do anything to drag it down to that. So, you know, I just want to say that I don't take a pill for rage. I'm not a... David put my position very clearly.
Yes, he did at the end. Yes, he did.
Right? But I also, I just wondering whether, you know, when people are new from proselytes to a cause, they often become zealous because they want to prove that they're more supportive of one cause or another than the old or seriously, so to speak. So I don't know what is going on, but I just want to say that Mr. I don't think, like I said, I repeat, Mr. Latouche does not know me enough as a person, in my estimation, to be able to justify that description of me.
Fair enough, sir. All right.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello? Brass Tacks, good morning.
Okay. Hello, good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Morning, sir.
Yeah, I heard, I'm going to go over something that you said not too long ago
mm-hmm.
in your opening remarks, when you were referring to the former prime minister of this country, in which you put it in a dubious manner, when you refer to husband and wife being broken up and et cetera. Mm-hmm. My questions to you are, mm-hmm. when you look at Barbados now, mm-hmm. and you look at what is happening in Barbados, forget about trucks and buses, because there are things that when the government is running the country, they tax the people and they provide these services for the people. Mm-hmm. They are not begging the government to do these things. It's not a favor. Always remember that. Buying buses and standing case truck is not a favor that the government is doing to the people of Barbados. They are taking out the taxes, and that's what taxes are for. Mm-hmm. So take the carriage trucks and buses out of the equation completely. Mm-hmm. When you look at the hospital, is the hospital in a much better place to go to than it was 10 years ago? When you go to the hospital and you get an appointment, you go now and they tell you come back in December or November to have a small operation then. Unless you could have medical insurance, which the doctor will tell you, and you could pay for the services offered by private doctors. When you go to the casualty, you are going to be admitted ward, but you're spending from Saturday to the following Saturday in the casualty. Are we in any better position, sir? That's the first thing.
You want me to answer that?
That's why I asked you the question.
No, sometimes you ask questions for asking questions. Sometimes you don't ask questions for me to answer. Sir, what's the reason for the delay, you know?
I do not know.
There you go. So therefore, I cannot say if we're in a better position or not, if I do not know how long the problem existed, what's the cause of the problem, and whether there's been no improvement in the problem since then. Because, you see, first of all, your reference to the casualty is one of the problems. There is no such place in the hospital anymore. It's called accident and emergency. It was renamed for a reason. Now, there are people who still refer to it as the casualty because they believe you casually go there, whatever's wrong with you, whether it's a sore foot or whether you get a gunshot wound. So I don't treat the hospital as a political football about asking questions, which is what you're trying to do. But that's just my view. Let me say this to you. The hospital has had a problem with financing that goes back beyond 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital has had a problem with maintenance, which goes back beyond 10 years.
Uh-huh.
The hospital has had a problem with management, staff relations, which goes back over 10 years.
Uh-huh.
What has happened over a period of time is there have been attempts to change the structure of the hospital, one by moving it to a board system. The present government has now tried to make it self-financing by raising the fees on certain things and giving it various ways of trying to make money. The truth is, however, that until and unless all the problems associated with the hospital, whether it's availability of beds, abandoning of people, functioning equipment, maintenance, and more importantly, staff management relations, one cannot sit and say, oh, the hospital went bad from the 15th of February 2008, or it went bad from the 1st of January 1979, or it went bad from the 1st of February 2020.
Mm-hmm. But is there anything good coming out of the hospital?
Yes, the people who work there very hard to make sure that patient care is maintained, and people who go there are relieved of their pain and suffering and can have things done. That has happened. That happens.
Yes, you can say that because of your past experience, but I'm sure there are a lot of people about this who would otherwise disagree entirely with what you're saying.
I'm sure there is. Sir.
And? Oh, good. So you're speaking about your past experience.
No, I'm speaking, sir, about the experiences of people who currently are there, people who recently left, and people who I've seen since I've gone there to visit them.
But I could tell about myself and my friend, Mrs. Canterbury, had a very bad experience.
Oh God, Mr. Canterbury, again, sir, Mr. Canterbury wrote your, he did your polling. Mr. Canterbury wrote your, whatever it is, we call it, what is called when a political party put out the manifesto. This Mr. Canterbury, right? I would invite you and Mr. Canterbury to join us on a Sunday to talk about the politics of Barbados, past, present, and future. That's my invitation to you and Mr. Canterbury. And as soon as you find him, you can bring him to me, sir, and we'll have that discussion. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Yes, sir.
Morning, Dennis.
Hey.
Clay, get out of here.
Yes, Clay, how are you? I'm all right, man.
I called to talk about what I know about hotels and tourism, but I just want to make a comment. based on some callers who talked about the QEH.
Mm-hmm.
Brief comment. In 2016, I spent 16 weeks in QEH as a patient in Ward A1. I went back in 2017 for a week, and again in 2018 for a week. And I can attest to the professionalism and the caring attitudes of the staff. Now, I am sure that the QEH has problems, but as a patient, I did not experience or see any of those problems. So I think we need to give God thanks for what we have in terms of the QEH. Yes, we can do better, but we need to stop beating it up. On to my other point. Mm-hmm. Now, quite recently in the newspaper, there was an article in one of the daily papers. I believe it was The Nation, but I'm not 100% sure. And the headline was, High Rises for a City. Mm-hmm. And it went on to detail a number of potential hotel developments in and around the greater Bridgetown area. I remember the late Stan Reed said that you cannot have tourism without hotels, but you can have hotels without tourists. And looking at the article, it speaks to the development of about 3,000 new hotel rooms and residential rooms in and around the greater Bridgetown area. Mm-hmm. I was expecting, after that article came out, to be some information as to the supporting infrastructure that would have to go in place to support these developments. And I'm thinking in terms of water, sewage, traffic flow, mm-hmm. telecommunication, study roadworks, and so on. Mm-hmm. And I have not seen anything. I don't know if I missed something, but I have not seen or heard anything as it relates to that. Now, if you're going to build a number of buildings in and around Bridgetown and the city area, and you're talking about putting in 3,000, approximately 3,000 hotel rooms and other residential accommodations, there has to be an infrastructural plan to support that. You can't go and build a hotel and leave it there. And this, the 3,000 rooms that I'm talking about does not take into account the Hyatt, which is something that we expect will start fairly soon if all the reports are realized.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to hear some more about what we're going to do about sewage in terms of the extension of the Bridgetown sewage plant. Personally, I feel that every hotel that's being built should have their own sewage plant up to a tertiary level.
Agreed.
We need to talk about the roadworks because there's going to have to be some major work being done to deal with the traffic in and around those areas. And when I talk about traffic, I'm not only talking about vehicles driving back and forth. I'm also talking about parking, because adequate parking is also a part of any traffic plan that is going to come up to accommodate these new developments. Now, I support the developments, don't get me wrong.
No. I am with you on that.
I think they are important. I can push Barbados forward. But it's just that we're missing some of the other components.
You see, and sir, that's one of the... I flagged it fairly early because I use the area. And again, like you, I spent some time in the industry with you, and I know the movement of people, either by buses, coaches, whatever, is something that we've had to deal with. When I look at Bay Street now, without the Hyatt, when there are boats in the harbor, from the boatyard, you go up to Copacabana, you go up to right up to just short of government headquarters, Harbor Lights. You see the coaches back to back on both sides of the roads. They're trying to turn across the traffic in and out of parking lots. It's chaotic already. If you're going to add a high-rise hotel, and I've asked on more than one occasion, are you going to make Bay Street one way into or out of the city? What's going to be the traffic flow? But people were then talking about whether is Mark getting all the business, whether Miss Ram building should get pushed down, whether it's of historic importance. I'm not saying those things should not have been part of the discussion, but that's what we were focusing on rather than the comments that you're making. And I keep wondering, when we have these town hall meetings, these environmental impacts, whatever, what it is we talk about. And why it is the one or two stacks, you know, stray voices that say, what about the traffic? Why nobody responds? And whether you put PR people in place, how do you engage the public when they've got a simple question to ask, like, what will be the arrangements for traffic? It has to be factored in. But we, you know, talking about whether they got more chairs on the beach and more umbrellas, and again, I'm not saying that's not going to be part of the problem. But if you're going to develop Bay Street right down to the harbor almost, because you're also talking about city hotels down at the end of the boardwalk, etc., you will have to discuss traffic flow in and out of the city. I support the revitalization of Bridgetown. Let me say that up front.
I was supporting
the pedestrianizing of Broad Street.
Of course.
If you do that, you have to talk about how you're going to build a ring road, how you're going to flow traffic in and out, and what you're going to do about moving people.
Let me give an example. A few weeks ago, Rendezvous Hill was closed because of major works going on there.
And the traffic was backed up for a mile.
You should have seen the traffic on Hastings. It took me 40 minutes to get from Marine Garden, Hastings, to Bridgetown. So that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. But so hopefully we will hear some more about it, and I'll see where we go. But as I said again, I support the redevelopment of Bridgetown. I think it can be done. It can be done well. We need to take advantage of the UNESCO heritage. We need to talk to UNESCO people and get some guidance from them about the buildings and so on. Because at the end of the day, they still don't want Bridgetown to look like Singapore, the coastline in Singapore. But I support it, and I think it's a good direction to go in.
Sir, I totally in your corner on this, and you know, we never figure out that there's a problem until it happens. Bats Rock was not a problem because Bats Rock was off the main road. It was down in the bottom of nowhere, and people used to go there and park up and have lunch. Somebody opened something there, and then you got people going to court to say you got congestion, traffic backup, they're making noise. You're raising a question about traffic, and people are asking questions about, you know, what traffic generating, why you're making noise about it, and so on. Until it happens, and then we'll scream and shout.
If you got 3,000 hotels, 300 hotel rooms, you estimate that to support those hotel rooms on a daily basis, you're going to have more than 3,000 staff members. Where are those people going to park? How are they going to get to and from work?
They'll take the bus, sir.
That's all right. but we need to improve the public transportation system. I have no problem in the state. I used to drive my car and leave it at a train station. I use the public transportation system, and it works.
It works.
All right, my brother.
Take care, my friend. Be good. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson. How are you doing?
I'm all right, sir.
Yeah, at the beginning of the program, you mentioned the profits of a company here. You know, my concern with these reports, you know, is that when you look at these companies, which essentially bring little or no foreign exchange in the country, they use a lot of foreign exchange in order to get the goods and services, the goods that they bring into the country, which are consumed by us. But then what happens is that having used the foreign exchange from Barbados, which they do not earn, they then are allowed to remit the profits to the head office, which means that you use foreign exchange to make your profits, and then the profits are sent out of the country in foreign exchange. And you remember some time ago I mentioned my concern about the extent to which we are having fewer and fewer Barbadian companies and more of the business landscape in this country is taken over by foreign companies. And this is at the root of my concern, is this fact that you have companies that do not themselves earn foreign exchange. They come into the country, they use foreign exchange to do their business, and then they have the right to send the profits out of the country in foreign exchange. And I don't know why this seems to be a problem to me. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be a problem to anybody else, but it really bothers me a bit. I don't know what are your views on it.
The two things. One, I think the belief is that that's the price you pay for having the companies here and for them providing employment for some of your people. It seems to be the reaction when you talk about the remittances. A long time ago, various CARICOM heads, and I want to welcome the CARICOM heads in Barbados, those who are here, you know, to the island. I hope they enjoy their stay. I hope they get a chance to have a sea bath and go to cattle wash and enjoy some Bajan hospitality at some beach house, perhaps having fish soup. The problem is this. Once upon a time, we had, and I still believe we should have, a trading currency, or a currency of trade, whatever that currency happens to be. But we tend to use hard currency. We tend to use U.S. dollars to settle remittances to Trinidad, to Jamaica, and as you say, to purchase items to sell to Barbadians. And we then turn the Barbados dollars back into U.S. to send back to the islands where the company resides or the company is headquartered. It is a drain on the foreign exchange reserves. Now, if we could balance it off by getting those companies as part of their overall performance to use Bajan products in their outlets in other islands, so send Pine Hill Dairy to Trinidad, not that that can happen, but yeah. Or locally grown lettuce or carrots or onions and send to the other outlets, we may get a little bit of fair play in the market. But if we bring all the canned products that they're part of producing in Trinidad and Tobago, with energy costs lower, production costs, etc., and sold here at a markup, it is counterproductive. It puts a drain on one island while benefiting another. And unfortunately, that's what happens, sir.
But you see,
it's imbalanced. It's unbalanced.
You see, you cannot. A person is not going to come up with a solution to a problem if they don't see the problem.
If they don't see a problem, agree.
And you know, I'm not restricting my comments to the regional companies. It also
no the foreign-owned entities
the
as well.
Companies that offer services. Now, we have another mega store which is about to open in Barbados. And every time, from the time I started the construction, I was asking myself, is there a need for this, and can Barbados support it? Now, like you said, the first thing you will hear is how many jobs they're providing. Okay? Now, but you have a new store which is going to use foreign exchange. Well, let's say that the initial stock comes from their head office. So they would use the foreign exchange from whatever country they're in order to stock. But after that, the money that is going to, the foreign exchange that is going to purchase the stock for that entity is going to be generated by other sectors in Barbados. Okay? So they're going to be using foreign exchange. Now, and the way that from what I have gleaned so far, there will not be much that is made in Barbados that's going to be sold in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So here it is, we're going to have another entity which comes in that's going to put severe competition on the existing Barbadian companies, right? Because they're going to be able to bring in a lot of cheaper stuff, flood the place, and jeopardize the employment at the local companies. You know, so I'm saying that I do not see a bright future where these things are concerned, because we are only looking at the short-term gain. We're looking at how many jobs this place is going to provide, but we're not looking at what is going to be the long-term impact on Barbados as a country.
If you can get these companies to support their Bajan enterprise by encouraging Bajan manufacturers or producers of items that they may want to put on their shelves to encourage them to produce more, to put on your shelves so that they can not only sell them here, but sell them at the regional outlets. Would that not be a benefit? Can we not use them? Can we not use them in that manner?
Of course, but like I said,
are we going to?
Somebody has to see that there is a problem in order to address it. No, and look, I remember some years ago I was associated with a company that manufactured woodwork with natives in this country, right? They can make some of the best quality doors that you can find anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But when a local company, one of the local distributors, wanted a door that was an irregular size, they would call that company and say, no, the standard height for a door is 80 inches. But they want a door that is 83 and a half inches high by 37 and a quarter,
mm-hmm.
Now, which is not the standard size.
Right.
How soon can we get it? It's going to take 2 weeks to get it. Man, if you all can't supply your door in less than 2 weeks, how do you expect us to do business with you? Now, you're supposed to have an outsized door there sitting down waiting for that.
Yeah, but you see, but that's being unreasonable, yes. But here's the other thing. But sometimes it takes just as long to get it imported.
But wait a minute, Dennis. Wait a minute. When they are using regular-sized doors now,
mm-hmm.
they import a container load
yeah.
from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're buying from the local supplier,
they buy one or
they
two.
They want to call you an order three. Mm-hmm. You want to order two. So you're supposed to, as the manufacturer, you're supposed to make these things with no access to finance and have them sitting down hoping that they would buy them. They're not going to say, well, we're going to have a relationship with the local manufacturers that they can produce things. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they say, oh, your cost is too high. But guess what? You're buying the material to make the items
from
the same people who are the distributors who are selling you the materials at high cost. And then they will tell you that your cost is too high.
Yeah, but you see, and those are some of the things going on behind the scenes of our production lines. When, you know. So I have to tell you, I have a great difficulty. I must admit, and let me admit to callers, I'm sorry, to listeners, I am really sorry. I am reaching a stage in my development where I'm having some difficulty understanding the thought process of my people and those who contribute to the program, either via WhatsApp or various other methods. Because it seems to me that we've reached a stage in our thinking where rather than trying to have a discussion on a subject and to focus on the subject, the objective is to criticize people or throw stones in the way. The previous caller was talking about traffic flows along Bay Street, a main artery into Bridgetown.
Mm-hmm.
And the comments about what traffic does Hilton generate and how it blocks up traffic. Hilton is not on the main road. Hilton is off the road. You're having a discussion about manufacturing, people asking what Barbados is manufacturer. Every time you try to say, here is an opportunity for us to grow and develop, someone asks, why are we having this discussion? And to me, it is counterproductive, it is nonsensical, and it does not add to the development of Barbados. Whether it is the BLP, the DLP, the HELP, or any other LP running Barbados, my position has always been that Barbados has to earn, E-A-R-N, its way in the world. We cannot continue to depend on foreign inflows periodically to furnish our lifestyle. We cannot continue to do what one politician called having champagne taste but morby pocket and using it as a cudgel to make us shut up. If Barbados is to develop, if we are to have more hotel rooms, if we have to have high quality service, if we have to provide international cuisine to those who visit Barbados, we have to earn our foreign exchange. So when we build hotels, we have to decide how many of the beds in those hotels can be made locally, by whom, how quickly, and how often. So that a hotel that has 3,000 rooms or 500 rooms can say to a manufacturer in Barbados, every 4 years, we will refurbish 50% or 75% of our rooms. So by the year 2022, we need to have 300 king-size beds, 200 queen-size beds, 200 single beds, whatever, by August of 2022. How soon can you start? Here's your mobilization fee. Here's what we want. This is our specifications. Give us. That will provide employment. That will provide income. That will provide sustenance for the people of Barbados. That is the discussion I want to hear. And I would love to be a part of it.
Of course, and precisely, but you see, the hotels, they don't even need to give you a whole room. You can pick out two items from that hotel, and you will be surprised to see what it will do for the manufacturing sector in this country. But and the point you're making is very valid. When we give all these concessions to hotels merely because they're going to build a hotel that's going to employ people.
And they're going to bring foreign exchange to pay for the land.
Yeah. So, but if you can say to that hotel, look, we are giving you these concessions, yes, you're going to supply employment. However,
this is what we want.
Give X percentage of the business for the operation of this hotel to local manufacturers, local agricultural producers, right? So that provide facilities that our craftspeople can expose the goods to the tourists, provide facilities that our entertainers can have entertainment in the hotels and people don't got to go in a toilet and change and come outside in the yard to play. Make sure that there are standards associated with what you're going to do in the country to make sure that everybody, because it makes no sense telling me tourism is my business, play my part, when I'm not getting anything out of it.
Sir,
you know,
a privately owned guest house in Tobago that refurbished, remodeled, and spent 60,000 TT dollars on drapes. Do you understand what $60,000 could do to people?
Any manufacturer?
People who sew in? I don't want to call manufacturer. I just want to call people who sew in. You know, because when you say manufacturing, people think in a plant and, you know, somewhere in Grisettes and somebody who sew in. Yeah.
So if a guest house,
five ladies in Nelson Street get a $60,000 contract to make some drapes.
But you know what will happen?
I know.
You get somebody saying,
"It's cheaper to bring it in."
Anybody else now?
It's cheaper to bring it in. Yeah.
You know, because you see, look, I was told once by a local distributor, by an employee of a local distributor, say, look, you can afford to give somebody a trip to Florida to attend a conference. You understand? So the local, the foreign supplier would invite you to a conference in Florida so that you can take your children to Disney World, right? To ensure that they keep you as a market. But you, the local fellow, can't do that?
I guess not. Oh, well. You have depressed me. You have depressed me enough, sir.
I would want to tie this whole thing to the drain on our friends. That's all.
Have a good one, sir. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you, Mr. Johnson.
Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to John Stowe, and good morning to the listeners. Greetings. Just two brief comments, Mr. Johnson. The first one is William, first caller. You say, as he said, you know, you want to wait people treat people so, and you say it's a flaw. I'm just like to give him a brief illustration, because it is that he missed the mark. It is inherited sin. So let's look at say a cricket, called we know a cricket. You put three cricket stumps on the pitch. You put one person in the middle of the pitch to throw the stumps, and you put the other person down by the boundaries to throw a ball to the stumps, but more of them missed. The guy on the boundary can't look at the one and say, man, you're closer than me, because all two of them missed the mark. We are all imperfect. My next point, Mr. Johnson, is that I've been down to the Winston Scott Polyclinic on Saturday evening, and Mr. Johnson, they only had one doctor and two nurses working. And they were very, very professional. And the staff was very, very, very accommodating. Because nobody was grumbling, quarreling. But I think they need to do something about that situation, man. Because not one doctor and two nurses at a 24-hour clinic. You understand what I mean? But they were very professional. They handled the patients very good. We had a lot of the children that came in that were treated first because they had some challenges. And I respected that because I had a situation that was very uncomfortable. So that's all I have to say this morning, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, sir.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Top of the day to you.
To you too, sir.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Johnson, I am calling here with an almost heavy heart. And the topic I want to talk about is respect and disrespect. Sometime in 2004, I took it upon myself to stand before the Fair Trading Commission and objected. Well, they call us interveners, but I objected to what Kibble and Werlis was trying to do, which is to make Barbadians pay per minute billing on that on their landline telephones.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the hearing, a decision was made basically to agree with my position. Kibble and Werlis appealed it, and a second decision was made also to agree with me. The matter was referred to the High Court, which incidentally works under the same rules as the FTC when they are dealing with matters of this kind. But the High Court also disagreed with Kibble and Werlis and agreed with me. And the matter finally went before the Court of Appeal, who also agreed with me. And for good measure, the three judges sitting suggested that I should be paid $6,000 for my efforts. Now, I have since spoken with some lawyers who I know very well, who suggested that they should have given me $60,000 for my efforts. I had to remind them that I just went there and objected and did not ask for one penny. So I was thrilled to have received the $6,000, which I promptly gave to the Barbados Consumer Research Organization. Now, yesterday at 2 minutes past five in the evening, I heard an advertisement which suggested that they were advertising some vehicles for sale, and they said that about the monthly repayments. Nothing else. They just mentioned monthly repayments. Now, I happen to know that that is against the Consumer Protection Act. So it is therefore illegal. It therefore shows a measure of disrespect for the law as it now stands. This morning again, at about 2 or 3 minutes just to 8 o'clock, a similar advertisement was made by a company, and that too suggested a monthly payment or monthly payments for the vehicle they were advertising, which is a blatant disrespect for the law. And it is true, we do have an agency of government called the Fair Trading Commission, whose duty is to stop these people, whether the broadcaster or the companies involved, for making such claims. But that law has been passed around 2002. And it is now 2020. And for some reason, I find that nobody seems capable of putting a stop to this. I also sat on the Fair Trading Commission committee, which put those laws in place. And I feel somewhat disrespected, too, that having done some respect for consumers, that there are some corporate entities who are ignoring the efforts I and others made to bring some sanity to this country. Mr. Johnson, do you think you would be able to assist in getting some of the companies involved in stopping this nonsense from reoccurring, sir?
No, sir.
Okay. That is a fair answer, and I respect you for that.
No, sir, because I have heard you make this comment before, and yes. I know it is something you've worked tirelessly on. You've raised it at several levels on this program. I think you, on occasion, you may have written to this company on the matter.
Yes.
Personally, three things. One, I don't know that the interests of consumers gets the kind of support that you anticipate and others anticipate from the organization called the Fair Trading Commission.
They have made
comments in the past that they cannot be complainers and adjudicators at the same time, so somebody should complain to them. However, the process of complaining to them seems not to be reaping immediate benefits for those who complain, so they just perhaps are not moved to complain. One. Two, companies seem to be able to ignore that particular requirement because they do not want to pay for the additional time or size they would take, or they would make the print so fine when they print the ad that you would need not even binoculars, you would need a telescope to read what it says.
Yes.
But they will tell you they complain with the law because they printed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have multifocal lenses on my eye, and I've tried all of them already, and they haven't been able to read some of the fine print because it's written in black on a red background, and I really can't read that because of other complications. So that's two. The third part, though, is the part that I'm concerned about, and that is the fact that as a broadcast entity, we transmit those messages. And therefore, the question is, what is the responsibility of the broadcast entity to ensure that commercials or messages that come to them conform with the law? Now, we pay close attention to what people say on the radio. That's why we have a producer, and that's why we go to, you know, lectures and conferences to bring us up to date on defamation, to protect the station from persons making statements that could get you into trouble. But I do not know whether the Broadcast Act or the Broadcast Authority, whether they pay as close attention to whether the messages being sent conform to the laws. So that's the third part of the equation that I wanted to put firmly on the table. Because if to support your arguments and your presentations to a station or to this station, the Broadcast Authority said, look, let us research the law, let us see if all our radio stations conform with this law, and let us say to our radio stations, in order to conform with this law, advertisements should carry the following, the same way we have protections for defamation. This is the standard to which you should, you know, ascribe. This is what you should pay attention to when you receive an ad. Let me say to you on a personal level, and this is personal.
Yes.
I have a problem with a lot of commercial content. I have a problem with the levels at which they're used. I have a problem with some of the creativity being used to present the message. That's my personal problem. But because I have that personal problem, I can't make it a station problem. I could make noise internally, but that's all I can do. I think there needs to be a check by the broadcast authority on that particular regulation. How much is it being observed in the breach, and how much is it being observed in the way the law is supposed to be adapted, and steps taken at that level to ensure that commercial content abides by the law? Because I know you've raised this before, as I said, those are the three levels I see standing in the way of getting it executed. Now, that's the best I could answer, sir.
Yeah, if I may, mm-hmm. What really caused me to intervene on this matter mm-hmm. is I heard one of your announcers earlier today castigated the way ZR drivers, who apparently are the whipping boys for bad behavior on the roads. Now, I said, well, that is fine. And then a matter of minutes later, there was the breaking of the law. I said, well, this here can't be right. If these ZR fellows are breaking the law, and we all accept that, surely the radio stations and the corporate entities should do better to show some guidance as to how the law should be adhered to. That is basically my point. I am saying that matter, and there's one other thing too. One has to understand that in Barbados, we have no laws of advertising, which I find almost incredible.
Well, there you go, and that's the first step in the chain.
Yes.
Because if you have no laws governing advertising,
we don't.
If you have no truth in advertising, the reasons
we do not.
So that's where the problem begins.
I agree with you, sir.
So then I can say, you know, that this product or service 100% guarantees or 99.9% guarantees, and there's nothing you can do to say that what I'm telling you is not the truth.
Agreed. I thank you so much.
I thank you as well, sir.